morning, and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Deborah Martinez, public health reporter for KUNM. Today, we'll explore what Albuquerque's mental health picture looks like and how changes recommended by the Department of Justice could transform the culture at APD, particularly as it relates to how officers deal with people living with mental health issues. Joining us today are Michael Maestas, clinical therapy manager at UNMH.
KUNM programming is supported by the law firm of Roth.
Nancy Kenningsburg, legal director at the nonprofit Disability Rights New Mexico, and Detective Sean Willoughby of the Albuquerque Police Officers Association. Welcome to you all.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning,
Deborah. First, let's set the stage for our discussion today with a snapshot of mental health in Albuquerque. Mental health experts say that most people with mental health conditions are not violent. But when they do get into trouble, it's often because they're under the influence of drugs or they're not taking their prescribed medications. And then when police get involved, things can go sour. New Mexico's Public Defender's Office says 75% of those shot over the last several years in Albuquerque had mental health issues. Nancy Kenningsburg, how is the Albuquerque community different from other areas of the state or the country, besides being the largest New Mexico city?
Deborah, I don't know that we really are different in terms of, you know, the percentage of people who have mental illness. I mean, I've never seen anything that says that. I think we have two issues going on here. One, obviously, the concerns expressed in the DOJ report about excessive use of force, which has been a huge problem for many, many years, and certainly the 9 years that they looked at. And in my observation in the 25 years I've been doing this work, the amount of services available have gone down over certainly since 1998 when managed care came in. And every time the state switches the way in which mental health dollars are administered, we seem to lose services. The hope has been since 2004 that things would get better when we went to the statewide purchasing collaborative. Some would argue things are not any better, possibly still worse. We're hopeful that things will change under Centennial Care, the new Medicaid program that promises integrated services. We'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
And we will get to that Department of Justice report in just a few minutes, but we want to set the stage here for what it looks like in Albuquerque. Detective Sean Willoughby is the vice president of the Albuquerque Police Officers Association. Detective, describe a few of the challenges that your officers face when they encounter a person who might be under the influence of drugs or living with a mental health condition.
I think that those challenges are very different depending on the certain dynamics of the reason an officer is contacting somebody that suffers from mental illness. There's a whole gamut of calls for service that go through our community every day. I would be willing to bet you about 75 to 80% of the calls for service we possibly take are relating to somebody with mental illness and crisis. A police officer's contact with somebody that suffers from mental illness or is in crisis, depending on the history of that individual, how many times they've been with law enforcement, whether those contacts have been positive or negative, what level of crisis they're at. It's very, very, it's a poor time to sit and psychoanalyze somebody because police officers, as you know, are a reactive industry. We react to other people's actions, and sometimes we're not afforded the proper opportunity to take the time to actually sit down with somebody and get them to the appropriate help because their actions don't allow us to do so. So one of the major challenges we face is a revolving door. There's been violence conducted by mentally ill on officers for a very long period of time, and these are individuals that had prior relationships with police officers. Sergeant Carol Alexak was on several calls for service with the man that ultimately took her gun and used force against her and was later shot by police officers. We've got, you know, John Hyde in this community, so it's definitely a problem, and it's definitely something that was going to take some collaborative effort to really get to the root cause of this issue and try to make this a better system for the city of Albuquerque.
Okay. And Michael Maestas, you run the UNMH patient center that treats people with mental illness, and sometimes it's the police who deliver people to you. What does your psych team see on a daily basis in the inpatient and outpatient facility there? Can you paint a picture for us?
Sure. First of all, I'd say good morning to my guests with me this morning, and
good morning.
Thank you for inviting us
sure.
to this forum. I'd like to just talk a little bit about the fact that we do provide the highest level quality care and services we can to the citizens here in Bernalillo County. And in terms of mental health, we have highly trained, skilled professionals from the medical school. Our psychiatrists and psychologists and our social workers and counselors are highly trained, skilled individuals. So I want to compliment them on their consistent treatment for the chronic mental ill that we have in our community. But I'd like to just back up a little bit, and I agree with some of the comments made earlier in the discussion about collaboration. I think it's important that we start talking about a collaborative effort between the experts that provide the care, like UNM Psychiatric Hospital. I myself am in charge of the psychotherapy department, and we treat chronically mentally ill patients. But it's really important for us to reach out to each other between the city of Albuquerque and the police force and other stakeholders and parties that are interested in ensuring that we don't continue the trend that we have of, arresting and using excessive force on people that are mentally ill, that suffer from psychiatric conditions that could better be handled in different ways with nonviolent forces, nonviolent crisis techniques. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, we have to start trusting each other and establish collaborative efforts between us.
Okay. Michael Maestas of UNMH, thank you. Some people argue that Kendra's Law should be passed here in New Mexico. That's a measure that would allow the forceful commitment of a person to behavioral health treatment with a court order. Proponents say that it gets patients the help they need, but that they sometimes neglect because of poverty and other reasons like fear. Nancy, you're against passage of Kendra's Law in New Mexico, as is the Disability Rights New Mexico organization. As an attorney, what do you see as the pitfalls of such a law that has come up before in the New Mexico State Legislature?
Actually, there are many things, and I how to explain this. The notion that Kendra's Law will be, quote, the silver bullet under these circumstances, I think is reactive and not fully informed. When people talk about Kendra's Law, it's used as a generic term, when in fact it's specific to New York, and the people who've done the studies, the longitudinal studies, have made it clear that the reason things work so well in New York was that, and I'm quoting from the report, the study that was most recently done. The introduction of New York's AOT program was accompanied by a significant infusion of new service dollars and currently features more comprehensive implementation, infrastructure, and oversight of the AOT process than any other comparable program in the United States. New York's program design is unique, and these evaluation findings may not generalize to other states, especially when there are no service dollars available. So what we've been talking about for years is that simply putting what looks like New York statute into New Mexico doesn't change anything. And there have been many attempts to do other things that have been asked for by the legislature. In 2011, there were two memorials passed, two task forces that came up, each with nine recommendations of how to address behavioral health service needs in New Mexico. Given to the legislature, nothing happened. In Albuquerque, interestingly enough, Mayor Chavez in 2004 paid for a consultant from Seattle to design a crisis intervention triage system for Albuquerque, comprehensive report, and many of us were really excited about that. Nothing happened. So I think you know, we have a mental health code, which actually deals with both inpatient and outpatient. We have a treatment guardian provision, which is a substitute decision maker. There were concerns, that it's not easily accessible on an outpatient basis, though like New York, there 75% of the AOT are from inpatient. Treatment guardian needs an outpatient process. There's a Supreme Court rule that's been drafted to address that we hope will make that work better.
All right. Detective Willoughby, does the Police Officers Association share Nancy's perspective?
You know what? Actually, I kind of do. I think that Kendra's Law may be a good positive tool, but in essence, it's kicking the can down the road, per se. I don't think that it provides an actual in-depth look at what is going on inside the state of New Mexico and Albuquerque, New Mexico, and curtailing a program that's specific to the needs of this particular community. I would support any legislation that would put more resources in the hands of medical professionals to really assist us solve these problems. But I'm not sold that Kendra's Law is actually the answer to this problem. And I'm worried that we have an opportunity before us right now to make some pretty positive change for this state. And I think that Kendra's Law would be a waste of that opportunity.
Okay. And Michael, as someone who's in the thick of it at UNMH and psychiatric help, what's your take on Kendra's Law?
Well, I believe that it's any improvement to our current processes be it something we should take a look at. I was on the task force under Governor King, under his administration, the forensic health task force, and our job was to review both the mental health code and the criminal codes, and we looked at some of the parameters in terms of where those codes either come together or don't match at all, and we also looked at the gap in resources and services to our citizens. But I'm not so sure if Kendra's Law, as our two experts have just said, might be the answer to us, but I'm always interested in looking at recommendations and looking at neighboring states or other individuals that provide for us some sense of improvement to our current system.
Okay, thank you. We'd like to hear from you today as well. Do you think people should be forced to take their medicine or compelled to stay at a treatment center, even if they say no? And that is what we want to know from you. Call now, 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. It's 277-5866. Or you can call toll-free 877-899-5866. And you can email callinshow@kunm.org or post our two-hour Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News. Police conduct in Albuquerque has been reviewed in several reports, including the Walker Luna study done 17 years ago that showed a higher-than-normal incidence of police shootings. Martin Chavez was the mayor then. And more recently, Mayor Richard Berry's administration commissioned a report by a police chief organization that made a number of recommendations, including one that called for every person that works at the police department to be trained in crisis intervention. Not all officers have received that training yet, though, although Mayor Berry says that he is committed to that initiative. Detective Willoughby, has the time come for real change in the department?
That's a loaded question right there. I think that definitely change is coming. And I think that we all need to come together to make appropriate changes. I agree with some of the findings in the Department of Justice. I think that it was intuitive, and I think that there were some pretty good recommendations. But I will have to tell you that I don't agree with all of them. This is not going to be a circumstance that gets policied or funded away. Police officers will always have to use force or be forced to be in force encounters. Police officer-involved shootings will happen in today's society as long as we don't live in a utopian society. And we're up for the challenge and we're up for the training. But
okay, and we have an email comment, then we're going to go to a phone call from Mary Dalton. She recommends that more sworn police officers take crisis intervention courses, not just because it makes their interactions safer, but because the course may change officers' opinions and perceptions. That's Mary Dalton. We also have a phone call from Bill in Los Lunas. Bill, you have a comment this morning. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Good morning to everyone.
Good morning.
This show is just balancing the individual with mental health. When an officer approaches an individual with mental health, there's two sides, the officer and the individual. Now, does the officer who tasers an individual until the battery runs out, doesn't the officer have a mental issue? The officer who states he has to get rid of human waste, doesn't he have a mental issue? The situation in the foothills, this individual could have been brought down by shooting a knee, shooting a hand, like several individuals. An officer always has time because they bring in the squad. That takes time. They bring in snipers. A sniper can shoot a black spoon off an individual's hand instead of killing him from far. That's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you for calling, Bill. Detective, a couple questions. What do you think about the CIT training for everyone? And if you want to respond to Bill's call.
I think CIT training for everyone is paramount. I think that it is more training is just to the betterment of our officers in the community. I don't find anything negative with increasing training for the Albuquerque Police Department, and neither do the rank and file. And to respond to the comment, this is some of the problems we have when we have a society of individuals that are trained by Hollywood instead of reality. Police officers are trained to stop an action. I wish that I had the capability to shoot an arm or shoot a spoon out of somebody's hands, but that's not realistic in a real-world scenario. And I respect his comment, but I'd have to formally disagree.
And we'll get into some of the details of the DOJ report to which Bill was referring there. Let's take a call from James in Albuquerque. James, you have a comment about CIT training?
Yes. First of all, thank you for having this show and for taking my call.
Certainly.
I think it's a mistake to train all of the officers as CIT officers. The current CIT officers self-selected to do that. They had an inclination to want to use the set of tools that were available, made available through the classes, and to have these officers out in the field available for situations is, I think, is a system that works fairly well. There's probably room for improvement, but I think it works fairly well. Training itself is a misnomer, I think, when we talk about people, because people aren't dogs. You can't train them and force them to change their behavior. Training is more akin to offering a tool to someone who then decides whether or not to use it. If an officer is not inclined to want to use the tools that are made available through CIT training, the training itself will probably not be very helpful. If we then have a situation where we believe that all officers are equally adept at crisis intervention, then we don't have a reason to look to those officers who self-selected to do this as being somebody valuable to bring into that situation.
All right. Thank you for your comment, James. I appreciate it. We are going to take a quick break now. This is the KUNM call-in show. I'm Deborah Martinez. We're talking about mental health and the Department of Justice report and what needs to change so that people, especially those who are vulnerable in Albuquerque, trust the police whom they need to protect them. We're joined today by Michael Maestas, clinical therapy manager at UNMH, Nancy Kenigsberg, legal director at the nonprofit Disability Rights New Mexico, and Detective Sean Willoughby of the Albuquerque Police Officers Association. Call now 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. It's 277-5866 or toll free 877-899-5866. You can also email callinshow@kunm.org. We'll read your comment and our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News. We'll be right back.
Support for KUNM provided by New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, a not-for-profit financial cooperative with member benefits for checking, credit cards, auto loans, and mortgages. Details on member benefits at nmefcu.org. We may not admit it, but many of us develop a real bond with our cars. Some may even call it love. But many years and many miles can bring them to the point where they just won't run anymore. Or maybe they've sustained too much body damage to fix. It's a way to honor your beloved car or truck one last time to turn it over to your other love, KUNM. We'll tow it away gently, sell it, and turn the proceeds into great radio. So go ahead, call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to the KUNM call-in show. I'm your host, Deborah Martinez. We're talking about reform of the Albuquerque Police Department in the wake of the Department of Justice report. That report finds grave instances of police brutality against Albuquerque's citizens. The report looked at more than 200 random cases, and it has at least 21 references to APD's failure to effectively defuse encounters with people with drug or alcohol issues or other mental illnesses, violating their civil rights, according to the Department of Justice. The report faults inadequate training and leadership as causes of those incidents. We're joined today by Michael Maestas, Clinical Therapy Manager at UNMH, Nancy Kenigsberg, Legal Director at the nonprofit Disability Rights New Mexico, and Detective Sean Willoughby of the Albuquerque Police Officers Association. Now, even before the DOJ report came out, national attention focused on Albuquerque and the shooting death of a man with schizophrenia named James Boyd. The FBI is now looking into that case that ended with officers shooting him six times after a three-hour standoff. It was referred to by one of our earlier callers, Bill. Before we go a little further, I wanted to keep that call in mind about the CIT training not being appropriate for everyone. Michael, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, that's a really good question. I believe that I think training is necessary for everyone. I've had the privilege of teaching correctional counseling, psychology in the law, and courses of that nature, as well as training in the academy, corrections academy, corrections cadets, and things of that nature for over 15 years. One of the things I think is that you need to have some basic training on procedural justice and the rights of people to be secure in their own persons as a baseline for everybody. Everybody should be aware that everybody has the right to security in their own person, including the mentally ill. And that should be a baseline discussion for every police officer and the rights that people have as citizens to be secure in their own persons. That's a basic type of training. It could be an introductory training. If CIT officers that are specially trained require more advanced training, I think that's imperative, that we have a team of specialists that are more advanced in their training on how to handle situations that might lead to potentially violent situations.
Okay. And James, the caller, also said that the CIT training is working all right now. The DOJ doesn't agree with that. What do you think, Nancy?
Excuse me. I think there are a couple of components to that. The CIT officers that I've met, I think, have excellent skills. And having more such officers trained, I think, would be of benefit to the department. There are two other parts I think we need to look at, though. The Department of Justice report talked about that the training curriculum at this point focuses on use of force and provides less training on other tools. They particularly mentioned the need for more de-escalation techniques, that all officers should have that tool, and there's less focus on that. So whether that's a basic CIT course or a more advanced course, I can't address it. But having that tool so that the first response is not use of force and having other opportunities, I think, is critically important.
All right. Thank you. So let's take a call then from David in White Rock. He has a question. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to point out that when I've seen videos, various videos, the one about of the homeless man in the hills above Albuquerque, the one of the state police officers attacking the car with the kids in it, and so forth. Generally, when I see a video with police officers behaving badly, it's what I see is angry police officers. I would suggest that an angry police officer is no better than a gang member with a gun. And anger management should be a crucial part of police officers' training. If in the course of their duty, their lapel cam or their dash cam shows them losing their temper with the public, they should go through additional training. And if they just can't seem to manage their temper, They don't belong on the police department. I've had a couple of instances over many years of being stopped by the police for speeding or for a violation and have that officer become extremely angry with me, and I'll tell you, it's very, very scary. Okay. And so I just would like perhaps the officer that you have to comment on anger management training and the appropriateness of anger in police dealing with the public.
All right. Thanks for your call, Detective.
Yes. First of all, I'd like to apologize for your negative experience with law enforcement. You can't paint the entire industry with a brush because of one bad experience. Every career path has good apples and a few bad apples. To expect a police officer not to have or display a basic human emotion such as anger is unrealistic. I don't want to give the impression that officers should be angry in their jobs or while performing their duty. But to tell you that after 12 years of law enforcement experience, I've never been in a situation where I was made angry on a call or had a feeling of anger would be a lie. And I think that the public and society today take the expectations on a police officer and they put those expectations beyond the realm of human behavior and the abilities of human beings to interact with other individuals. And I think that that's not just and a little bit unfair, but I do respect your comment, and I hope that my answer doesn't anger you.
When the DOJ launched their full-scale investigation of police practices, you know, back in 2012, 25 men, most of whom had mental health issues, had been injured or died after encounters with police in a two-year period. Since 2010, that number's climbed to 37 men. In one of the most horrific incidents that the DOJ looked at, a suicidal man whom APD encountered at his apartment had doused himself in gasoline. The report states that after the man had been tased multiple times, he burst into flames, and another officer had to put out the fire that engulfed the man. Detective, is Albuquerque and the union members you represent ready for change in ways like that to follow policy that clearly states, according to the DOJ, that you can't use a taser when there's a dangerous situation like gasoline or flammable materials in there? There wasn't an isolated incident as far as the DOJ report stated.
I will say this. I think that tasers are too widely used. I think that an officer, you have to understand something. If you're going to use force on an individual, or you're on a call where force is going to be used, or you have to use force to maintain control, whether you use a taser or an open hand strike or to gain compliance or some sort of pain compliance, force is still going to be used. The taser is a wonderful tool because it allows me to use and have very limited injury to an individual and gain that compliance, as to using a baton, mace, or in an open hand strike. It also looks better. It looks not as brutal as hand-to-hand combat in a force situation. Not to say that the police officers in the city of Albuquerque are ready and open to whatever changes come down. We want a seat at the table to make sure that they're appropriate changes and they're not knee-jerk reactions that are completely unrealistic. The taser in the city of Albuquerque in the use of force continuum, or the RCM module, was policied for basic noncompliance of an individual. So if somebody...
What's the RCM module?
The reactive control module, which is what our use of force training used to be before it was changed. So police officers would have an RCM, a reactive control module, and they would have a picture with different colors, and they would say if a subject is doing A, B, and C, the response, appropriate response to a police officer should be A, B, and C.
Regardless of whether they have a mental health condition?
Well, like I said prior, you if you have time, if you're given the time in the situation to assess whether somebody has a mental health condition and actually begin to talk with them, that's in control of the individual. It's not in control of the police officer.
But you do know that before you get to the scene usually, right? You have some idea of their
not
condition?
Always. These individuals don't wear a sign on their or a T-shirt that says I'm bipolar or I suffer from mental illness. Some of those things are not known. Before you get there, you might have an indication that they are, but you can't change the way that you respond to calls and sacrifice officer safety or the safety of the public because somebody has a mental health issue. This is not the time to fix their mental health concerns. Police officers are called to the scene to fix a problem usually caused by this individual, and that problem needs to be fixed. It's probably the 25 arrests prior that somebody should have actually identified this individual had a serious problem and got them the resources that they needed.
All right. Nancy, from Disability Rights New Mexico's perspective, does APD need to, or what do they need to do to save the lives of people in crisis who the report shows or found that they usually are incapable of following orders, which creates that volatile situation?
There are a couple of things. There are instances where, you know, failure to obey or in the way people commonly talk about it, contempt of cop for failing to obey immediately, escalate situations. I mean, we have clients who've had situations where they are physically unable to respond or comply, and yet due to a mental disability, to a physical disability, TBI, whatever, and yet, that situation escalates. I think that one of the things to think about, and the DOJ report talked about, is, and I quote from the report, it's important to note here that when officers use force after they've been called merely to check on a vulnerable a person's welfare and not investigate a crime, the reason for the call is relevant in considering and determining whether force used was reasonable. I want to go back to the earlier comment and discussion. A couple of things that the DOJ report is looking at is that the total, the overall use of force policy needs to be revised in the belief, the DOJ belief is that the policies are geared toward that as being a first response. And then the notion of what other tools in a toolbox in terms of, again, what are de-escalation techniques? What are other opportunities? Taking a deep breath, stepping back. I recognize that that's not possible in every situation. However, starting with the use of force perspective as opposed to other perspectives, I think is important, and the training and the policies will need to be changed to reflect those changes.
Thank you, Nancy. Let's go to a call from Lois in Santa Fe. You have a comment. Good morning, Lois. Lois, can you hear me? Hello, Lois. All right. So we're going to go to Nick now in Albuquerque. Nick, what is your comment or question?
Yes. Hi. My name is Nick Sitterly, and I'm an attorney here in Albuquerque. And I've actually handled several civil rights cases, some of which were featured in the DOJ report in the section that replaces the actual subject's names with anonymous names. Worked on some of those cases. I've taken a lot of depositions of police officers. I've done a lot of legal research on it and a lot of research on training methods. And I would just say that really the biggest issue for me is not training. The biggest issue for me is accountability. Training is absolutely a huge issue, and I believe your guest from APD was talking about the reactive control model a minute ago, and then I actually brought that up on my computer while he was talking. The reactive control model is something that a lot of officers are trained with. It's a favorite of APD trainers and of BCSO trainers. And
that's Bernalillo County Sheriff.
Yeah, Bernalillo County Sheriff's Office and APD trainers use this all the time. And it's basically a chart that's broken into four color areas. And it's pretty much all done from the perspective of law enforcement. And there's not a single mention on the entire chart of mental health issues. And what's also interesting about the chart is that there's pretty much only one area, the very first area is the blue area. And that's the only area where the officer is told that they shouldn't use force on a subject. And that's basically the area where the subject is being 100% compliant with everything the officer is telling them to do. Mm-hmm. All of the other sections of that chart allow a use of force for, you know, any kind of noncompliance, basically. And really, there's not even a suggestion on that chart that you should threaten to use force before you actually use force, like to tell the subject, hey, you're not doing what I'm telling you to do. I'm going to have to use my taser. You know, I'm going to have to, you know, start using force methods on you if you don't comply. None of that is actually on that chart. It pretty much just goes from 100% compliant to go ahead and use all the force you want. And so, you know, I really think the whole training mechanism is absolutely broken. You're right about that. But the issue to me is accountability. The issue to me is there really isn't a valid mechanism out there to monitor the officers as they do their job. They've got lapel cams on, but they can start and stop the lapel cams anytime that they feel like doing that. And to me, when you've got an individual who's got several lethal weapons on a on their person, and they can bring any one of them out and use lethal force at any time they want, you need to have a much stronger monitoring mechanism. And the idea that I've floated and that I've been in support of for a long time is that the officers need to be monitored pretty much around the clock while they're on their shift. Okay. And I get a lot of, you know, responses about that, that, you know, that's not practical, that's not possible.
All right.
It's entirely practical in this day and age to do that.
All right. I appreciate your comments, and we'll have some response here from the detective and from Michael Maestas. Don't want to forget about you, the psychologist or psychotherapist from the UNMH Center. And before we go to the two of you, I want to take another quick break. Time is flying. We're going to take that break. I'm Deborah Martinez. We're talking about changes called for in a federal report that found a pattern of excessive use of force by Albuquerque police. What do you think needs to be done? Do you agree with the DOJ report, or do you have ideas like this last caller did about accountability or training or other issues? Call us now, 277-5866 here in Albuquerque, 277-5866, or toll free 877-899-5866. Email callinshow@kunm.org if you want. We'll be right back.
Our thanks to those of you who donated during our spring fundraiser and to those of you who came in to answer phones. We appreciate La Montanita Co-op donating the Blue Sky soft drinks, Whiting Coffee providing tea and coffee, House of Bread providing lunches and Monday's dinner, and Zia Diner in Santa Fe for breakfast and dinners the rest of the week. Thanks to Radio Frequency Club members who donate year-round. Keeping KUNM going strong takes a real community effort. Thank you, everyone, for doing your part.
Hey.
Hey, Chuko. Hey, what's up?
Shannon.
What?
It's that time again. Tune in to YMP's Audio Revolution. We will be exploring the topic of coming out, and we'll have all kinds of stories from strong people who decide that they have no choice but to be who they are.
Check out the personal stories about relatives who have come out, interviews with local activists, research of resources and support services for those who are in need, and much more. Listen to Youth Media Project's Audio Revolution this Friday at 8 a.m. on KUNM 89.9 FM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. We've been talking about ways to move forward in light of the U.S. Department of Justice's report that found the Albuquerque Police Department violated residents' civil rights through excessive use of force. That complete report is posted online at KUNM.org. Michael Maestas, what are some of your thoughts on the caller and training? What do you think?
Well, I really appreciate the caller's comment about the issue of leadership. I think we're at a particular point in this situation where leadership has to take the perspective that we do have to assure that people have procedural justice, and that we report constitution, and we're required and obligated to be concerned with constitutional guarantees for the protection of the welfare and safety of people. A lot of the calls that we're talking about have to do with welfare checks. There's a lot of incidents noted in this report by the Department of Justice that reflect individuals who have not committed a crime. So the particular training strategies that the current administration is putting forth are those that really are escalation strategies rather than de-escalation strategies. And they've been pretty much cited for excessive use of force. So we have to look at the leadership perspective and just take accountability to that. We can't ignore that. We can't say that all these situations were lawful, all these situations were based on policy. If I may just cite from the report itself, it says, the report says, we have determined that a structural and systemic deficiency is apparent, including insufficient oversight, inadequate training, and ineffective policy. So leadership cannot take the defense, we follow law and we follow policy. When I sat on the task force for the forensic task force, we had to look at the leadership perspective. What can we do to improve the system? What can we do to make it right? And we have to have that leadership hat on and be accountable for the decisions that we arrive at.
All right, thanks. The DOJ report recommends that APD develop protocols on how to handle interactions with individuals, those with known or suspected mental health issues, including those going through a mental health crisis, people with developmental disabilities, and individuals who seem to be intoxicated or impaired. And that's a direct quote from the report. Detective Willoughby, does the union agree with that DOJ recommendation? Is it practical for you?
What recommendation were you speaking on specifically?
That the APD develops protocols on how to handle interactions with people that are known to have mental health issues, including those going through a mental health crisis, people with developmental disabilities, and individuals who seem to be intoxicated or impaired.
Sure, I'm not opposed to protocols that'll be established to attempt to ensure that that officers reinforce the training that they've received to slow a situation down when that situation is upon us. But the very, very important to understand, you know, when we talk to the reactive control model, just because somebody's in blue doesn't give an officer carte blanche to use any force that they want. That's not what we're trained. And most officers have and possess the communication skills to tell anybody, I need you to step out of your vehicle, sir. I need you to step out of your vehicle, sir. But one thing I cannot do with over 600,000 calls for service in this community is say, I need you to step out of that vehicle, please, 50 to 60 times and have the same end result. There is going to come a point in time, and people need to understand that you're not going to policy or prevent force by police officers, because there is going to become a juncture in time when I have to get that individual out of the vehicle, whether he had committed a crime or he had committed threats of violence to himself. The first time I tased an individual was a woman who was a welfare check, to be honest with you. She refused to come to the door, and under the community caretaker, I had to force entry into her residence. She was an elderly woman, and her daughter called from out of state saying that she was cutting her wrist. And when we got into her bedroom, she was. And she had a knife, and she was cutting her wrist, and she was bleeding out on the bed, and she refused to drop the knife. So I tased her, and I was able to gain control of her, stop the bleeding, get her to medical health professional, which my actions actually saved her life in that parameter. What else? What other options did I have?
You weren't in a position to get the knife away from her.
Yeah, we're not ninjas. I'm not a UFC professional fighter. This isn't Steven Seagal on Under Siege. Those are unrealistic tactics, and to expect a police officer to perform at a Hollywood level, everybody's kidding themselves.
All right, let's go to some calls. Now we have a lot of them waiting. Chuck from Santa Fe has a comment. Thank you for waiting to speak. Chuck, what is your comment?
I have two comments. Thank you very much for taking my call. The first one is, you can delegate authority. You cannot delegate responsibility. My second comment is about, quote, gun control. If these officers can't shoot something at a very reasonable target, and they have to spray and pray, then they need a great deal more firearm training. They could have shot Mr. Boyd in the knee or the hand, and that's not Hollywood, not at that range. Those guys, the amount of ordnance that they displayed and the amount of ordnance that they used was way over the top as what they could have been done. If they had sharpshooters there with, quote, long guns, they could have taken this guy down without deadly force. That's all. I'll take the rest on the air.
All right. Thank you for your call. Any comment?
I think we could have a whole other show on the dynamics of what this caller said, and I don't want to take any more time.
All right. Did you want to say anything, Nancy?
generally, I want to talk about the earlier comments of what alternatives there are, and one of the callers comments about management and supervision, basically. I think part of the accountability issue, again, was addressed in the DOJ report about how to review uses of force, essentially do, you know, an analysis, have a supervisor do an analysis of a use of force to break it down, to look at the components of it and see what might have been different. And the accountability piece, I think, is what's really important on that and doesn't happen. The other thing that I do want to say is that clearly something can be done right. I think it was the day before the DOJ report came out, there was another incident of a person who was threatening suicide, and that situation was successfully de-escalated, and nobody was hurt in that. So also dissecting what happens well to use that as a teaching tool, I think, is an opportunity that the APD might take more advantage of as well.
All right. Thank you. Well, let's take a call from Clifton in Albuquerque. Good morning. What's your comment?
Good morning. I've been concerned for a long time that occupations like the police can attract people who wish to exploit. And I know that for a number of years in different forces around the country, there have been different methodologies for screening out, for want of better technical language, sociopathological behavior that would allow an officer to be more likely to exploit his position or her position, and also get into a position of power where they could help create that culture. So I'd like to hear from both the detective, if possible, but also from the people from the hospital. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for your call. Very quickly, did you want to respond, Detective?
Just so that you know, currently right now, when I became an Albuquerque police officer, I had to go to like a 15 to a 20 stage process to include a psychiatric analysis of myself. I had to be interviewed by a psychologist. I had to do a history statement. There was no expense spared in looking into my background and contacting people of people of people of people that knew me throughout the course of my life to have the honor of being able to carry my badge of office. It was extensive. It was a very long process, and it is still currently going on that way in the city of Albuquerque right now. So I agree, and it is being done.
All right. Let's take a call from Therese in Albuquerque. Good morning, Therese.
Good morning. Thank you for having this show this morning.
Sure. What is your comment?
Well, I'm a 70-year-old woman and a resident and a nurse in Albuquerque, and I had a very bad experience with a sheriff, undercover, it turns out he was. I bumped his truck when we were both stopped at a streetlight, and he jumped out of his truck and said, "You crashed my truck, follow me." And his manner was really hostile, intimidating, and I said, "Let's called the police," and he shouted, "I am police, off duty." He flashed his badge, and that was that. And he never spoke with me. And when I sat in my car, I said, "I have a 5 o'clock urgent medical appointment." And he never spoke to me again. And then he said, if you leave, I will handcuff you." And I had no intention of leaving, but I was frightened, and I hoped that the other police would arrive soon. And when they did, they explained he was an undercover agent, and it was because his truck was a government truck that we had to stop and spend an hour noting that there was no damage to either vehicle. I reported, wrote up a report to Internal Affairs. The letter back from them was he was within his proper behavior. So I'm reporting this because I guess we really do need citizen oversight. Internal Affairs was not responsive. And I'm fearful for other 70-year-old seniors to have such a terrible experience.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Therese. And I want to talk more about the Oversight Commission. I'm sure the detective has some comments on that. But let's take another call from Wendy in Albuquerque first. Good morning, Wendy.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My husband and I are both physicians. I just want to make a comment. I'm here in Albuquerque, and we deal a lot with a lot of the very dysfunctional citizens of Albuquerque. And I think if we're going to really look at the problems, we need to look at our society more. I feel that we're basically, I'm not agreeing with excessive force or poor behavior, but I think when you are surrounded continuously by dysfunctional people who have not had enough support by society, we cut funding, our political policies are not supportive of the mentally ill, and I think we're just seeing the consequences of that. And I'd like to, take a step back, and we have to look at the bigger picture and not the Albuquerque Police Department only.
Thank you so much for that perspective. What about the Police Oversight Commission, which just has 3 members left as of this week? Nancy, is the POC relevant anymore?
Yes, the POC is relevant. One of the recommendations in the report is that there needs to be more oversight. Over the last couple of years, the ability of the POC to do its job has actually been undermined by this administration. And I was present at one of the POC meetings when the city attorney, in fact, issued his opinion about a certain activity that the POC was undertaking, that they were not allowed to do that, when in fact, by ordinance, they were. And that happened again last Thursday night, which then triggered 3 people leaving. So hopefully reform on that will come as well.
Detective, I saw a YouTube video where you appeared before the city council last fall, and you were not happy with the POC, and in fact suggested it be eradicated, disbanded.
Yes, ma'am. We have 2 arms of civilian oversight in our community. We have something called the IRO, the Independent Review Office, who is a citizen appointed by the mayor, and she has carte blanche to get Garrity-protected statements and has full investigative authority of citizen complaints. Mm-hmm. Now, the POC and the commission of the POC is supposed to be a last result of a citizen to appeal the findings from the IRO. So it's just another level, another system that a citizen can go to actually have their stories heard. And what happened in the city of Albuquerque is the POC had a breakdown of what their job actually was. The POC is supposed to look at trends in internal affairs, trends in citizen complaints, make recommendations to standard operating procedure changes to make the police department better for the citizens of Albuquerque. And then in return, when a citizen has a problem or doesn't agree with the IRO's findings, they can appeal to the POC, at which point they become an investigative body and get more information regarding this specific complaint. In order to have, the recommendations, I applaud the task force for spending the time and volunteering their time to actually work out some recommendations of change. What I don't appreciate is not having a seat fundamentally at that table. The police officers' rights, the police officers' perspective, the collective bargaining agreement that governs discipline in our community for Albuquerque Police was not consulted or tasks, and I believe that there were a lot of individuals on the POC task force making recommendations to fix a broken process that were biased and one-sided in their decisions, and we do not support all of those recommendations, no.
Okay, and Michael, did you have any quick comment on this discussion today? Left you out a little bit, sorry.
Thank you, that's okay. The only quick comment I have is that leadership requires objectivity, and sometimes internal review boards are not as objective as citizens would require them to be. So I think that's why we have the Department of Justice now conducting a review of this particular matter, because we need an objective stance. And I think both the POC and those type of boards have a responsibility to report to the citizens that the city is being objective rather than subjective to the responses of use of force.
And I'll note the DOJ did conclude, if no resolution in this matter, the DOJ can file civil suit to eliminate the pattern and practice of police misconduct as they discovered it over a year and a half of investigating the Albuquerque Police Department. I want to thank all of you for joining me this morning for a very enlightened conversation here. Thanks to Michael Maestas, who you just heard, clinical therapy manager at UNMH, Nancy Koenigsberg, legal director at the nonprofit Disability Disability Rights New Mexico, and the Vice President of the Albuquerque Police Officers Association, Sean Willoughby, a detective in the force. Thank you all so much for coming in today. We've posted links to the information we discussed today, as well as the Department of Justice report on the Albuquerque Police Department at KUNM.org. And if you missed any of our program or you'd like to share it with friends, the audio will be posted online at KUNM.org, where you can also find audio from previous KUNM call-in shows. You can email comments still to callinshow@KUNM.org. You can find us on Facebook, search for KUNM Radio, or follow the newsroom on Twitter at KUNM News. And thanks to Jefferson White, our engineer today, Michael Hess, screened your calls. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive.